careful listeners of On the Media, Wesley Morris, we're looking at you, will know that we released our regularly scheduled podcast Extra on Wednesday. But to quote many people on Twitter, this week has been a very long month, and there's more to say. So here's a second podcast extra to tide you over until the show is released on Friday. You're welcome. The COVID-19 pandemic has expanded our vocabulary with terms like social distancing and self-isolation. In an article in Slate this week, Jeremy Samuel Faust, who's a physician and instructor at Harvard Medical School, gave us one more: case fatality rate, or CFR. Initial reports have the CFR for this disease at 2-3%, but Faust writes that the actual number could be much lower. Using the cruise ship the Diamond Princess, a unique petri dish, as his case study, he explains that of the 3,711 people on board, at least 705 tested positive for the virus, and 6 people have died. A CFR of 0.85%.
What makes the Diamond Princess so interesting to somebody like me is that you know that pretty much everybody boarded the ship healthy. And so you can look at a kind of closed system to say, how does this virus behave? And it gives you a really interesting idea about things that you might normally not be able to detect, like how many people actually contracted this and didn't know it. They were symptom-free or asymptomatic, as we say in medicine.
Among those who tested positive, how many were asymptomatic?
It looks like well over half at the last time that we received an update, which is far more than what we've been told in places like China, who are sort of, you know, obviously having the first real outbreak. China did say that they went and looked and tried to find people and they went door to door, but it just doesn't seem that they accomplished that, because when you have this ship to compare it to and more than half of the people with this virus had no symptoms. And also, really, that's what we're hearing now coming out of South Korea, where they are doing hundreds of thousands of tests, literally drive-throughs. And so the number of asymptomatic, symptom-free patients with this virus, I predict, is much higher than what we initially heard out of China.
So in the ship, half were asymptomatic, roughly. There were 7 people who died, and all of them were either 70 or over?
If you look at China, which has these staggering fatality statistics, all the deaths really are concentrated in that older age group. But only about 12% of the overall cases were in the 70-plus age group. And yet they comprised a huge number of the deaths. Interestingly enough, in the Diamond Princess, the percent of the overall cases in old people is far, far more than what you saw in China, which would have said, uh-oh, we have more old people, there's going to be a high death rate. But in fact, the death rate was much lower even among those age groups. I don't necessarily assume that the spread of the virus elsewhere would reflect what happens on a cruise ship. But what I think is really fascinating is that as you zoom out of the epicenter of where this all began, the death rate does seem to have gone lower and lower and lower. And we have to wonder why that is. This whole experience made me a little bit of a detective of sort of Chinese epidemiological patterns. Thankfully, we actually have really great peer review research. And not surprisingly, in Hubei, there is far more lung disease and related problems in those areas. And so you might have an at-risk population. And then the other thing, of course, is as you get further and further away, the number of test kits probably changed. The number of cases actually skyrockets the more you test, but the number of deaths only goes up a small amount because all the deaths were sort of in that initial group. This is where we get into fractions and people, their head spins. But it's really simple. How many people do you think died and how many people do you think have it?
What can we derive from the Diamond Princess case that we can't get from the data flying in from Italy and South Korea and China?
What the Diamond Princess allowed us to do was to say, well, maybe the overall fatality rate is a lot lower, and maybe we can get an idea, actually, even within the risk group populations, that things are better than we thought, because we maybe had been over-attributing deaths to coronavirus, which is something that we also really didn't talk about. You don't really know in ICU. There could be 20 patients in there, and 10 of them might pick up coronavirus, but they were already on their last day from cancer or heart disease. We don't know how many people in these other countries that you mentioned died of coronavirus versus died with coronavirus. And the people at Diamond Princess, you have to say pretty much whatever medical problems they might have brought with them, it's pretty fair to say they would not have died but for coronavirus. And that, I think, is a very important distinction.
Were there any variables from the Diamond Princess that confounded you, that seemed to be inconsistent? Is there something I'm missing?
The only thing that I would have liked to have seen is actually an entire manifest of all 3,700 people on board. The fact that just more old people got it on the ship, I assume that just reflects the demographic of who was on that ship. Truly, there were four times as many senior citizens on this ship than there were in the areas around the hospital in Wuhan City. That'd be nice to know. Is this generalizable to another group of people?
Do you think there are any lessons that either the media or our elected officials or top medical experts aren't communicating very well?
I think the biggest actionable piece of information that the experience on the Diamond Princess represents is the benefit of wide-scale testing, because they're thinking, oh, if we test a lot, we're going to find more cases, and everyone's going to look to the left and look to the right and say, oh, we all have it, and more panic will ensue. But in reality, if you actually test everyone, some really beneficial things happen. If I'm a young, healthy person who has a cough and I'm told, by the way, that cough happens to be coronavirus, I'm not going to visit the nursing home. I'm not going to expose my sick relatives to myself. Massive testing can really help save lives, because if I didn't know I had it, I actually might give it to someone who's far more vulnerable.
Can we afford to do that?
We do a lot of screening for medical conditions in this country, and we have a belief that some of it may work and may save lives. But if you really do the deep dive, there are very few screening tests that save lives in such a predictable and measurable way. And this is that rare circumstance in which that is the case.
So what do you think news consumers should keep in mind when they read or watch about new cases in seemingly every corner of the world?
We spend all of our time like one of those people on the beach with the metal detectors. The thing goes off and that's where they dig. And that's what TV is doing. They're spending all their time right there, whereas the rest of the beach is actually habitable. There is such a thing as doing too much. And people say, well, how is that possible? How is it possible to do too much? The only way I could describe it would be to say, if I have a shopping list that says I need to get milk, and the shopping list is one item long, it's unlikely that I'm going to forget to do it. But if I have 50 things on the list, the likelihood that I'll forget the milk goes higher and higher and higher. And I worry that if we're trying to do everything, shutting everything down before it even is in a town, I'm worried that we focus on the wrong things and miss the things we actually do need to worry about, which is protecting the at-risk populations and doing the guidance about hand washing and those kinds of things.
Right. What would be at the top of your list?
Large-scale, comprehensive national testing is the priority as far as I'm concerned outside of doctor's offices and ERs and hospitals, because we need to save those resources for the people who need them. I think that's how we're going to find out where the disease is, where it isn't, and how to protect the people who are the most at risk.
Jeremy, thank you very much.
It's really nice to talk to you, and wash your hands, be safe, and in the coming days, I hope that there will be less panic.
Jeremy Samuel Faust is a physician and an instructor at Harvard Medical School. His article in Slate is called COVID-19 Isn't as Deadly as We Think.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.